Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, Secretary Roebling, Al Nedved, Deputy Director for the Division of Parks and Recreation. And yes, this morning we'd like to give an update on the Spring Creek Golf Course property, which is affiliated with the Good Earth State Park area there as well. So as you may recall, this Spring Creek Country Club or Spring Creek Golf Course property was purchased by the South Dakota Parks and Wildlife Foundation back in 2015. And they purchased that golf course and negotiated that purchase with them under a 10-year contract for deeds. So even though that purchase was made in 2015, they've been making the payments and also leasing that property back to the Spring Creek Country Club for continued operations there for a period of 10 years. So nowadays, 10 years goes by pretty fast, and we're getting closer to the end of that contract for deed. And so we've been having a lot of discussions about this property here in the recent years. You know, the Spring Creek Country Club, it's an 18-hole golf course just southwest of Good Earth State Park in Lincoln County, south of Sioux Falls there. It has a clubhouse on it, a pro shop, a small shop building maintenance complex there, and a golf course storage shed there. So it's about 160 acres of property there that was eventually part of the purchase. And that purchase was funded primarily through private donations, mostly the Robert and Rita Ellman Foundation and James and Eloise Ellman Foundations contributed a large sum of money to facilitate that purchase. And there's also some federal grant dollars that went into that purchase as well. So you know, part of that, the negotiation of that purchase did involve some negotiating with some of the local homeowners groups there, including the East Homeowners Association, that did allow some restrictive covenants to carry forward with that land purchase there, mostly related to how the game fish and parks, when they would assume management of this property, could develop that property. And so it kind of stipulates where certain developments can be constructed, when, you know, certain facilities such as camping facilities could be constructed. It has kind of a delay period for when those can take place. So back in 2020, in fall of 2020, the department started kind of the process of looking forward to this potential transition first meet with some of those homeowners groups there. So we could, you know, one, we could really understand what those restricted covenants agreements and other negotiations that took place there. You know, so we really understood those, and then, you know, kind of let them know that we were kind of going to go through a public process and help the department you know, develop a vision for that property to see what the best use of the property is. So it started with those discussions with the homeowners and hearing some of their concerns and so forth. And then ultimately in the fall of 2021, we started having some public discussions with the broader public there in the Sioux Falls area to you know, get input and have some discussions about, you know, what some opportunities and what some concerns are for that property moving forward. And part of that process was, you know, we're also meeting with certain stakeholders, such as Lincoln County officials. We're meeting with some of the tribal folks that have been historically connected and have interest in that property as well, since it is within the portion of the property or within the Blood Run National Historic Landmark property there, and just some other folks there. So we're, you know, had a lot of those discussions and continue to have some of those discussions regarding you know, various interests in that property. So as we kind of worked our way through that, and you know, we've heard a lot of concerns from some of the homeowners and about you know what that means for them with a potential state park unit within their proximity there. We've heard from a lot of folks looking at you know some of the opportunities that this property could bring for the future, and you know a lot has also changed since you know, the property was negotiated back in 2015 during a period when golfing was you know, seeing some declines both, you know, locally and nationally. and participation and interest in golfing. And since the COVID epidemic, there's been a big resurgence and a lot of things, unlike in what we've seen in the park system, but, the golfing industry has seen a COVID boost as well. And a lot of interest back in golfing. So a lot of folks and a lot of groups with an interest in golfing have approached us or voiced their concern about, they'd hate to see this golf course go. And it does play a role in the overall golfing community in the Sioux Falls area. So what we, considered and are moving forward with right now is to try to, work with some folks and see what the opportunities are for a, what do you call it, a short or a long-term extension, of golf course operations there. The department really has no experience in golf course management. That's kind of not our deal. And so we've been talking with some of the golf course management corporations there in the Sioux Falls area to understand a little bit more about it and really just see if there's an interest in extending that golf course operations, because the department, like I said, we're not in a huge hurry to take over the management of this property. It's it's adjacent to Goodhart State Park. It would make a great addition to some things there, but especially with the restrictive covenants that are on the property, there's not a lot we can do even once or if we assume the property in 2025. So what we're really kind of focusing in on right now is developing a request for proposals to see if there is some interest in like a 5 or 10 year extension of golfing there under that thing. But with the caveat that someone else who really knows golfing and knows the business can do that service for the department. So we've met with several golf course operators to get an idea, what might go into an RFP, what some of their concerns are that with their knowledge of the golf course as it sits today, and what we can do. So we did see that there is some interest there, and potentially in that opportunity. And so we are moving forward with an RFP that we hope to release here shortly. Before we can get to that RFP process, though, we did kind of determine through our discussions with these folks, and especially with the existing golf course operators, that the original contract for deed probably did not contemplate some of the fine details of a transfer there, especially as it is relates to continued operations. So we've also been negotiating with the current golf course operators and what we call a settlement agreement, which is kind of a supplemental agreement that kind of does iron out some of those details and makes it a little bit smoother to put an RFP out there. It buttons up some of the details for potential bidders, so they kind of know kind of where they stand with certain things. Things like personal property, their equipment, mowers, and things in the clubhouse like bar stools and loose items that are not attached to the real estate. What or how could those properties be transferred, and how can we advertise the transfer of that property? Also, there's some basic information about the operation that would be of interest to potential bidders, like some of their financial statements and how many rounds of golf they do in the last 5 years and things like that. So they bidders can have a good understanding of that, and also things like intangibles, like their websites and domains and phone numbers and reservation systems or whatever they use there. Can those things be made available to make that transition smoother? So like I said, we're kind of working through that settlement agreement. There's a draft version in front of the Spring Creek Country Club board right now. And we hope if we can get that, sealed up here soon, that will basically pave the way for putting that RFP out there later this summer. We would probably open it up for 60 days or so, maybe 90 days. I don't know if we've quite decided how long the RFP would be open, but try to give adequate time for folks that are interested to look at that opportunity. So that's kind of what's coming up with that property here for the short term. And be glad to take any other questions anybody has.
Sure. Does anybody have any questions for Al? Commissioner Whitmer.
Yeah, thank you all. Yeah, we had the opportunity to visit that area. I don't believe it was more than 2 years back anyway. I believe our original intent was to have camping opportunity on that property. Like you said, the golfing was looking like it was less demanding, I guess, or the demand for the golfing was less, and it was a great opportunity for camping. With today's outlook, like you said, camping is still highly sought after, but so is golfing. Is there an alternate site? As we look at developing camping, should this remain as golfing, is there an alternate site that you're looking at, so we can move ahead with plans of increasing camping opportunity, regardless of what happens to this property?
Okay. Great question, Commissioner Whitmire, through the chair. When we did the original master plan for the Good Earth State Park, which involved kind of the basic 600 acres that exist there today, we determined, that there probably was no sufficient location for camping within that existing Good Earth property there. So as we've kind of looked around and it's very well known that the camping demand, especially in the Sioux Falls area, is extremely high. So as of right now, we do not have any properties within the state park portfolio or of our lands that we currently manage that, where we can maybe expand, other than obviously right now at Palisades, north of Sioux Falls by Garrison, that project has afforded us an opportunity to expand camping at that location there. But other than that, unless there was an opportunity for some additional land base in that area, we do not have any sites that are identified for camping expansion.
Any other questions for Al? So the Reader's Digest version of it, if we have this option, is go in and talk about extensions of the existing operations, and a default, if we do nothing, what happens?
If there is not a golf course operation there, we'll have to kind of start looking at, what that might look like transitioning out that property. And we'll have to, work with the South Dakota Parks and Wildlife Foundation and see what kind of options the department can support and transfer there. But that's kind of why we're looking to try to get this decision point past us here this year, so we can at least spend the next final years of this contract for deed planning for that transition.
Okay, thanks, Al. While you're there, I think we'll just go on to number 25 with the camping visitation and revenue report.
Okay, thank you. Liz will kind of pass out the version of the May reports here. With the earliness of this commission meeting, obviously we weren't able to get those reports into the booklet in time here, but we do are allowed to get some of that information fairly quickly within a few days. So this is kind of the draft version of camping revenue and visitation through May. We're getting ready for a busy year, and May is obviously kind of the kickoff of the season here. And even though some of those May storms and on May 12th that Willie gave you an update on, things are looking good for another great year. And some of the weather in April obviously was very harsh with wind and cold and a lot of things going on there. So a lot of our early numbers were low, in April and early May there, but things are looking up. And on the first page of the sheet there is some of the revenue numbers, which are kind of indicators of where we sit with our park entrance license sales and then also camping sales there. So you see for the month of May, we're still a little bit behind with some of the park entrance license sales, which is pretty typical when people can't get in the parks early in the season. A lot of folks, when they'll come out, they'll buy those park stickers as soon as possible. But like I say, some of that weather this year kind of turned a few folks away. So we're not surprised to see some of our park entrance license sales down. But as you can see, our camping services for the month of May is up. The actual camping units that we have for May was a little bit down. So what you're seeing there is some strong reservation numbers. You know, people, you know, getting on the website, getting on the call center, making those reservations for the summer coming up here. So we're a little ahead of last year with a lot of those camping reservations. And like I say, we're a little bit behind in terms of just getting folks out there this year, but you know, things are looking well. And you can see on the following sheets there, starting with the camping there, you know, like I say, we're down 4% for the month of May and 8% year to date. But with the May, with the weather and everything there, that's not unexpected. So, you know, May typically we see about 13 to 14% of our annual camping use occurs through there. So a lot of camping yet to occur there. And then on the next page is our visitation numbers. And again, with the slow cold spring there, we're down about 11% for May and down 14% for overall. And typically in the month of May, we see about 25% of our annual visitation there. So, and then on the last page are some graphs there that, you know, once we kind of get into the season, you can kind of see where we stack up on a 10-year average basis. And, you know, on that graph, you, by month, you can see the lowest recorded figure for that month, in yellow. And you can see the highest, recorded, number for that month recorded in gray, and then the average is in the blue there. And then as you see on the red line, that's kind of where we're tracking for this year. So we're not at record high levels, but we're well above average. And so it's looking like it's gonna be another really busy camping and fishing and swimming and all the good stuff that happens out in the parks. And like April indicated earlier, a lot of good events happening out there. And so we're looking forward to another good year. And then if I may, through the chair, I do have a little bit of update on some of the staffing things that Commissioner Ressler asked about earlier. So sure. If there's any questions on the visitation or camping, I can just give a little bit of an update with staffing. And, you know, this is a busy season. And, you know, usually in March and April, that's when park staff is, you know, they're out there aggressively seeking seasonal workers and volunteers and interns. And, you know, the interns and volunteers and seasonals are, you know, they are the lifeblood of our operation. They provide all of those critical services that we have out there. And with, you know, some of the labor shortages and concerns that are out there around the country, you know, it's, you know, we feel some of those as well. And so we're, you know, we typically, and I think through this month, we have hired over 420 seasonal employees this year. And as we've kind of asked around the regions to kind of see, you know, how they're doing with vacancies and so forth, happy to report that, you know, we do have a few out there, but overall they are, you know, we're filling some of those seasonal positions. And I think we have about 18 seasonal positions that are still open out there statewide, which with 420 hired so far, that's feeling good about that. Even though that you know, we definitely do not see the number of applications per position like we used to, but our staff is doing a great job, and every year they have new and creative ways to recruit and get seasonal employees in the parks. And you know, it's a really creative way to really get people in the parks and show them how, you know, they can get, you know, great skills, have a great time. You know, a lot of these jobs you can have a lot of fun doing them. And, you know, you can take a lot of pride in a lot of these seasonal jobs. They, you know, I know, speaking from experience, that was one of my favorite jobs I ever had, was working seasonally for the parks. And you meet a lot of great people and learn a lot of great things. So they're really looking at ways to get those seasonal employees hired out there and doing a good job. Like I say, we've had a few pocket areas where getting seasonals is a little tougher than others. You know, in the Southeast, actually, you know, we're sitting pretty good. We don't have, you know, as many vacancies there as some other areas. Here in the Northeast, especially like in the Roy Lake and Port Citizen District, you know, there's still a few spots open there. And then out in the Black Hills, we still have a few seasonal positions there as well. So we're Working to fill those positions, and also on the full-time vacancy side, you know, we've got 15 vacancies for full-time positions as well. So that's something we're trying to, you know, fill those and get up to speed on some of those, whether it's through retirements or reorganizations of positions and things like that. You know, we've got a good variety of full-time positions out there as well. And then with volunteers, you know, we're, you know, obviously we do a tremendous amount of work with our volunteer workforce. And I know we've given some updates in the past on what that means to the division, both fiscally and otherwise. But, you know, we typically see over 100,000 hours of volunteer service in our park system, which kind of boils down or equates to about 60 full-time positions that we do with the volunteer work. So huge part of what we do. Again, just kind of asking around the regions kind of where we sit with volunteer vacancies. We got a few of those left as well. There's probably about 9 to 10 positions, which are mostly the campground hosts or maintenance volunteers that, that we're trying to fill yet. And like I say, just a, kind of a few here and there, but you know, hopefully we can kind of keep recruiting and marketing to those positions and get those filled as soon as possible. So yeah, we got a great season ahead of us. The workforce is looking strong, and you know, they're doing a great job, and I know we're looking forward to another good year. So be glad to answer any questions.
Sure. Commissioner, do you have any follow-up on that? Or?
I think so. Thank you.
Thanks, Al. Yeah, Commissioner Bartling.
Thank you, Commissioner Bartling. Al, on the seasonal, is there an age limit as far as for youth, for example, to be employed in those positions?
I believe, Commissioner Bartling, you know, our minimum age is around 16, and we do have some positions there where we've hired as low as 16-year-olds and 17-year-olds. You know, with those younger ages, we got to be a little bit careful about what type of work they do, whether it's you know, maintenance work or things like that. But we do hire some teenagers. We sure do that.
Thanks. Any other questions for Al? Thanks, Al. We'll see you next time.
You bet.